Welcome back to Sunday Morning Public Affairs on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority. I'm Bob Russell, your host for the show, joined as always by my co-host, fellow traveler and partner in crime, John Jurisic. We spent the first hour having a very interesting conversation about education, the curriculum review, and applications of new technologies. Now, joining us in the studio, as always, for our second hour is Lisa Helps, Victoria City Councillor and community activist. Hello, Lisa.
Good morning.
You were at the UBCM this week.
Good morning, John.
Which is the Union of British Columbia Municipalities. So we're interested in chatting with you about that, some of the things that happened. I got to tell you, Lisa, that when I used to work in provincial government, and I'll say it was a government of another province, whenever our municipalities got together, for their annual meeting, we used to call it Winers Week.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Huh. Anyways.
Oh, he's setting you up.
That's just my two bits, okay? So take it away. What was what did you find most interesting about this week? There were some things that made it into the media. Obviously, the premier's speech, the leader of the opposition's speech, the decriminalization issue. Why were municipalities talking about decriminalization of marijuana?
Well, that's a very interesting question. It's been in discussion for a long time, but I think that it came to our attention because, as you well know, municipalities are struggling for revenue and have lots of policing costs. And those two things are related because if marijuana were decriminalized, or better yet, in some people's opinions, legalized, A, it can be regulated, so we don't have all the kind of underground economy that grows from it, and B, and related to that, we can have tax revenue generated from marijuana in the same way that it is from cigarettes, and that could be a real boon to struggling municipalities.
There's a lot of different places I could go there.
These are some of the rationale. I didn't put the motion on the table, but I did support it when it came up.
Okay, now, I guess one thing I want to point out is that in media reports, the one thing that I don't think was dealt with adequately was really the answer to the question of why would municipalities be talking about this. It's a criminal code issue. It's a federal government issue. It's their jurisdiction. Keep your hands off. What does it matter to municipalities? And the first part of your answer is, and this was not explained, I think, by anyone this week, is that there is a real issue of police costs.
Absolutely.
A huge item. For municipalities. And the amount of time and money, police resources that are devoted to this could maybe be devoted elsewhere. But then you get into the whole issues of decriminalization versus
legalization.
And just so people understand, there's a pretty significant difference between those two. The problem with decriminalization, for people who, aren't maybe totally familiar with this, is that right now possession is a criminal offense. That goes on your record, it stays there, and suddenly, you're not going to be able to travel to the United States. You're not going to be able to do a lot of things.
Get a job working in the volunteer sector. And
precisely.
Even if you're an 18-year-old busted with one joint, right?
Yeah.
So we're not talking
exactly.
about trafficking. We're not talking about anything like that.
Yeah. So, decriminalization seems to be a pretty simple step.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Legalization, on the other hand, that's a completely different matter. We had police representatives at the convention saying, guys, we're right across the border from the largest drug market in the world.
Mm-hmm.
If you think, you're not going to be, creating, continuing to foster crime and getting organized crime out of this issue just by legalizing it, you're dreaming in Technicolor. What do you think?
Yeah,
about that?
I think that's interesting. I think that it would if the motion and just to be clear for all of the listeners, it's not that pot is now decriminalized. Just so people understand, because people have been posting things on Facebook in regard to other motions on my Facebook page asking what are the implications of this motion being passed. So just to be really clear, it's not a decriminalization. It's asking the federal government.
The federal government is responsible for deciding what's criminal and what's not.
Yeah, exactly. But legalization is much more complicated. And just like anything, I think decriminalization is a step in the right direction. Let's see if that even happens. Let's see what the implications of that are. And then maybe afterwards we move to legalization, or maybe we don't. I mean, that's a very much more complicated issue. I agree.
Absolutely.
But can we kind of just come back a few steps?
Yeah.
Because what we're now talking about is the issue of decriminalization, as opposed to what I would like to hear from you, Lisa, is more around the issue of why that motion hit the floor. You explained a few minutes earlier it's because municipalities need money. And so let's just frame that motion as hopefully one of 50 different ways in which municipalities are trying to be creative and innovative towards generating money to pay for services.
Or save money,
decriminalization saves the legalization.
So can we talk about that?
Yeah.
And what happened at UBCM around that?
Well, that's interesting. That was the main theme running through the conference. Not every single motion. There are 207 motions. You can see this very thick book here that came to the floor. But the central theme of the conference was revenue generation for municipalities, and particularly infrastructure. So I don't think the people that put the decriminalization motion on the table were thinking about, oh, let's decriminalize, then legalize, then we can tax and make money. But it is a significant policing is a significant cost to all municipalities, regardless of whether the services are provided locally or by the RCMP. Yep. And a lot of resources go into unnecessary, in my opinion, policing of, you know, the 18-year-old with the joint. So it will hopefully free up some costs if this should move forward.
Were there some other motions that dealt with other, let's call it, and I'm using these little, I got my fingers.
Which really works well for
radio. It does
in radio.
were there other innovative ideas around finding ways to help municipalities get through these difficult times? Now, as Bob mentioned, and I'd like to ask you about this as well, was there work done on the cost side? Within the last couple of months, we had front page news on just how much some of the senior executives are making in a variety of municipalities.
You know what? That is a good question to which there's a long answer and a long discussion, which we'll do after our commercial break.
Excellent. Thank you.
You don't know where to go. You're new to town and you need a garage you can trust, but you don't know where to go. Take it to Midas, the locally owned garage that's been trusted on the island for nearly 30 years. They're convenient, no long waits, and they can fix everything. Tires, oil changes, leaks, and big repairs. Take it to Midas, the service of a local garage and the guarantees of a national chain. Visit Midas.ca.
Hi, it's Wendy from All Victoria Vacuums. Have you ever bought an appliance only to get it home and spend the next 3 hours putting it together? At All Victoria Vacuums, we take your vacuum out of the box, assemble it for you, and even offer to help you to your car. We carry the best brands like Dyson, Sebo, and Ricard. Does your vacuum need a fix? Our repair estimates are always free and our technicians rock. All Victoria Vacuums, the little guys on the corner of Hillside and Cedar Hill for 34 years.
Are you prepared for the fact the government may claim a large portion of your estate? This is Robin Muir of Hatch & Muir. Assets like your cottage, stocks, mutual funds, and other investments left your heirs may be subject to large capital gains taxes. These taxes have to be paid before your heirs receive anything. We've helped many clients implement cost-effective ways to ensure their beneficiaries receive full value. Protect your estate. Call 953-6816 or visit HatchMuir.com. Hatch & Muir, we can help you.
It's a known fact that 1 in 9 Canadians has at least one risk factor for heart disease or stroke. Sobering news? Yes, but you can fight it. Take control of your heart health with Kyolic Age Garlic Extract, clinically proven to reduce LDL cholesterol, improve blood pressure, and increase circulation. Want to learn more? Visit Lifestyle Markets and ask about Kyolic Age Garlic Extract on Douglas Street, in Cooksby Village, and on 5th Street in Sydney. This product may not be right for you. Always read and follow the label.
Hey there, Johnson. How was Palm Springs?
Great. Shot some golf.
Nice.
Got some sun.
Nice.
Oh, and I played some tennis.
Nice.
I fractured my wrist.
Nice.
And I took an ambulance ride.
Nice.
I had surgery.
Oh, nice.
And I wrote a check to the hospital for $45,000.
Yeah, they accept checks. Nice.
Don't let a medical emergency ruin your next trip south. Protect yourself with BCAA Travel Insurance. Save up to 12% online at BCAA.com.
You don't just love sports, you live sports. And CFAX 1070 knows the score. Junior, amateur, pro. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Welcome back to Sunday Morning Public Affairs on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority. Bob Russell, John Jurisic, and Lisa Helps. We're talking with Lisa about this past week's meeting of the Union of British Columbia Municipalities. And where we were going to was, okay, how much of a sense was there that people needed to start focusing on either generating more revenue, but more importantly as well, on the cost side, reducing costs, Lisa?
Well, it's interesting. Most of the Union of BC Municipalities conference is spent passing resolutions asking other levels of government to do things. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's kind of the thrust of the conference. But then in addition
Back to my introductory comment about Winers Week?
I don't think so. I mean, Barb Desjardins, the mayor of Esquimalt, said something very interesting to me in a coffee break. And we'll come back to answering John's question in a moment. But she said, and I kind of experienced some of the conference through this lens, that the most interesting part for her is actually the dialogue that happens on the floor when the motions are being debated. And there wasn't, I actually didn't experience it as a Winers Fest at all. I thought, wow, this is really productive time spent for politicians from across the country to come together and have dialogue. So back to the question of fiscal responsibility of municipalities, there were some key resolutions passed in Section A, which are the first thing we get to, asking for a renewal of infrastructure funding programs. And Federation of Canadian Municipalities is working hard on a program called Target 2014. And then the second motion that came to the floor was one on local government involvement in review of municipal taxation. So looking at different ways for tax sharing to happen, municipalities to get a more adequate share of taxes. So again, focused outward on finding funding elsewhere. But interestingly, it wouldn't make sense to make a motion to say, let's ask ourselves to find more ways to be fiscally responsible. But there were ample workshops throughout the conference, and not one focused on looking at creative ways for municipalities to cut costs to generate revenue. So it was very outward focused in that way, and I think it would have been very useful, and maybe that's something that I can organize for next year. If I think it's useful, I can organize it, to have a workshop on what are some creative ways for municipalities to rein in their own costs in addition to lobbying other levels of government.
Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, one thing that's always concerned me. Now, obviously, I've never been to a UBCM meeting or anything else like that. I ask you this question. I mean, you know, I made the offhand remark about Winers Week, you know, and asking other levels of government to solve your problems and so on and so forth. I mean, I'm aware of the issue at the municipal level, that the financial pressures that they're under as a result of a lot of stuff having been downloaded to them. The thing that always concerns me is I'm not sure municipalities are aware of the pressures that provincial governments are under. The fact that, for example, and this goes to general fiscal framework issues, that, you know, since 1975, the download from the federal government to provincial governments would be approaching somewhere in the magnitude of $1 trillion. Until 1975, the federal government matched dollar for dollar every dollar a province spent on health care, post-secondary education, and welfare. Until the early 1980s, the federal government spent well in excess of $1 billion a year on social housing. That first piece was reduced in 1976, the piece for post-secondary education, healthcare, and welfare. And according to most calculations, and it's a mug's game in terms of how you do the calculation, but those social transfers, as we now refer to them, are somewhere most people would agree between 20 and 25%. And of course, in the early 1980s, the federal government completely left social housing. You know, people of John's and my vintage can remember when every community had what was called CMHC housing. And that was how you referred to it. It was CMHC housing. You know, that was the social housing in the neighborhood. That doesn't exist anymore. So, huge download
You know, and to be clear, what the federal government was doing was it was withdrawing from expenditures in an area of provincial jurisdiction to deal with its own situation. But, you know, every time I look out my window, I live down by the water, and I see that stupid midget submarine out puttering around that costs us God only knows how much, I get quite angry because I look at it and I say, you know, there isn't a provincial government in this country that can afford to make mistakes like that. But the federal government can't, thank you very much. So back to you know, where I started. I mean, is there an understanding and appreciation at the municipal level that the challenges we have right now are for the whole fiscal framework, the whole way the country is organized and how things get financed and programs are delivered?
I don't know if there's necessarily an explicit understanding of that, but what you say makes a great deal of sense. And I have a Globe and Mail report here from last Saturday. It feels like a long time ago, with reference to the Drummond report in Ontario. And we can talk about that in a moment, because I think that that might be leading us in somewhat in the right direction. I think the frustration that municipalities feel as a whole is that while there's been a devolution of responsibility, there hasn't been a corresponding devolution of taxation power. And that's the frustrating thing. Municipalities are asked to do more and more and more. You know, I heard a very, very interesting statistic this week at, I can't remember which presenter it came from, that municipalities get 8% of tax dollars, roughly. That's kind of a commonly known fact. And own fully 50% of all infrastructure in Canada.
Interesting.
So there's a big discrepancy there.
It would have been neat to have some media reports talk about innovative thinking around how we can deal with this problem. It was a tad frustrating for me to say, you know, just to jump on, okay, let's tax marijuana, you know, let's tax this. So there must have been some sort of constructive dialogue around this as you're talking with your fellow councillors across BC.
Absolutely.
Tell us about that.
Best conversation I had was with Sav Dhaliwal, who's a councillor in Langley, I believe. Now, Langley went bankrupt. Shit, is it Langley or Burnaby? Burnaby. Anyways, one of the I believe it was Burnaby, because Burnaby went bankrupt during the Depression. Yep. Bankrupt. And so what they did, this is, and I came back and I told our director of finance right away, what they did is 25 years ago, they passed their new OCP, and they immediately, as a municipality, started buying up land and assembling parcels in areas slated for the development. And then they would sell those parcels when a developer came along and development would happen and make some money. Do you know how much that city has in reserve right now?
How much?
$700 million. $700 million in reserve. While the rest of the country is scrambling and clamoring, Burnaby has it all figured out.
Well, you've certainly from what I've read, and I can't speak for the other councillors, but you've been a leader in financial accountability at the city level.
Absolutely.
And I admire you for that, and the business community admires you for that.
Yeah.
And so it's encouraging to know that there are discussions around how do we deal with that, that simply aren't around taxing more.
No, taxing more or asking senior governments for more money.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we have to look at the other sides.
Well, and if we
innovative ways plus on the cost side.
Well, and if we want, I mean, the other theme running through the conference was local autonomy, local autonomy, local autonomy. We want more decision-making power. Well, if we want local autonomy, then we need to be creative locally about generating revenue so that we actually don't have to walk around with our hands out.
Now, John mentioned earlier, you know, the headlines we had here locally about how much senior municipal officials were being paid. And there was some, you know, comparative stuff done to other, you know, provincial government, federal government, so on and so forth. But there wasn't a lot of discussion or debate. There was a little bit at the time about how this has occurred. You know, why is it that municipal officials are paid so much? And to be clear for, you know, our listeners, I mean, this is not how you solve fiscal issues. I mean, we're talking about an amount of money that when you read about it seems like a lot, but when you're looking at an overall budget, it's like a rounding error. But it sends a message. It's a symbol. I mean, one of the things I heard about why this occurs is that, you know, there's this roving group that goes around from municipality to municipality to municipality to negotiate the compensation package for, mm-hmm. for the public servants. And so they take it better here, and they just say, well, so-and-so signed up for this, therefore you have to sign up for this. And they pick them off, one at a time or by splitting them up, rather than doing it sort of as a whole where everyone could come to the table as a whole. Was there any discussion about at the meeting about, how they could more efficiently negotiate with municipal employees?
Do you mean collective agreements or exempt staff?
I'm talking about exempt staff.
Okay, so that's a different story altogether.
Yeah.
Because collective agreements, as you well know, are negotiated between HR and the union, municipality by municipality.
Yeah.
And there's, but I think the real problem is not in some degrees. I mean, is in the union salaries, but really the problem, the challenge for municipalities lies with senior administration, both in terms of the wage structure and mm-hmm. in terms of, at least I can only speak for the city of Victoria, and in terms of the organization of senior administration, the number of directors, assistant directors, and managers.
Yeah.
So there was, again, there was no discussion, no workshops, and now I'm propelled to organize one for next year.
Excellent.
We're coming up with your work plan.
Yeah, there you go. That's great. That's excellent.
I don't know if you noticed that.
But I think that one of the things that's interesting about the Drummond Report, and I haven't read it in its entirety, but I would like to, is that, and we're right now at the City of Victoria, and I know that other municipalities are facing these same questions, need to do something to cut costs.
Yeah, just quickly sort of let our listeners know, the Drummond Report, which Lisa is referring to, was a report done by Don Drummond on the state, the fiscal state of Ontario,
mm-hmm.
and he did not paint a pretty picture.
No. And then the report from last Saturday's Globe says that Dalton McGuinty is, for all intents and purposes, ignoring him mm-hmm. when it comes to solving fiscal problems. And I won't read the whole article, obviously, but I want to just read a section of it because it's really relevant to what we're talking about and in terms of how municipalities are going to move forward. So the article says no section of the report was more explicit on this front, the front of cost savings, than the one on labor costs, which account for the bulk of government's expenditures. And at the City of Victoria, fully 50% of the city's budget is for labor costs.
Mm-hmm.
Wage freezes are often followed by wage catch-up periods, the report says. Such action, if undertaken in the current fiscal climate, would undermine our longer-term fiscal mandate and damage labor relations. And so, for example, at the city, if we freeze senior compensation for the next 3 years, right, say, well, having a wage freeze at the City of Victoria, all exempt staff, well, so then 3 years later, we say, oh, well, we better catch up, right? It doesn't solve the problem. It just puts it on hold for a rainy day. And so what Drummond suggests is that we really need to move to performance management, to results-based budgeting, to tying compensation to performance. And that's it'll be a very interesting conversation to have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. John, you had a quick question?
I had a quick question. It might be reserved for after the break. And moving now almost 180 degrees mm-hmm. off, we talked about social media in our earlier hour and how it was impacting education. Tell me, how did you feel and find in experiences around the conference? You were very active, and I found it fascinating.
Lisa, I'm going to let you answer that when we come back from our commercial break.
Your best choice for selection and value in flooring is locally owned Camino Carpets and Flooring. You'll find everyday low prices and all stock in Camino's 7,000 square foot warehouse. It's loaded with a great selection of laminate, engineered hardwood, vinyl, and tile, much more than just carpets. Whatever you need on your floors, Camino's seasoned sales staff and professional installers will save you time and money. Just call for a free estimate. Camino Carpets and Flooring. New location, new showroom, same great savings. 3950 Quadra Street across from Lumber World.
He used to be an Air Force man. Now he picks up junk and sends it on a permanent vacation.
See ya!
He's Pete of Pete's Holiday, specializing in estate cleanups and same-day junk removal. A recycling-friendly company, 15 years in business. Let Pete's haul your junk to the dump. Call Pete's Holiday today at 888-1221 or click online 911junk.com.
Oh,
I like yard work.
Take the hard work out of your yard work. Visit Integrity Sales for quality equipment and products that make your yard work easier. Quality is a priority at Integrity Sales. They do soil analysis, they formulate their fertilizer and grass seed blends with performance in mind, and they have all types of yard and garden tools that help you work like a pro. When it's time to enjoy yard work, it's time for Integrity Sales.
I love my yard.
Integrity Sales, 2180 Kidding Cross Road, where the professionals shop.
You may not believe in the curse, but I believe in you.
CTV Sunday Night will leave you in a trance. Three new seasons, one new series. They're all back on one big night of fantasy, suspense, reality, and drama with Once Upon a Time.
Magic is coming.
The Mentalist.
Revenge is a hobby I like to dabble in myself.
The Amazing Race.
You will win $2 million.
The Mob Doctor.
Now belong to me.
It all starts tonight at 7 on CTV.
Shop with confidence at Save-On Foods. We're priced right. Grade A frozen turkey, 3 to 7 kilos, just 95 cents a pound, limit of one. Or Ocean Spray cranberry sauce, 348 mils, card price just $1.49 each. Plus, for exclusive offers on products you want, sign up at SaveOnFoods.com. Save-On Foods, BC's very own since 1915.
CFAX 1070 is where Victoria turns first for local news, weather, and traffic, with more news than ever before. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Welcome back to Sunday Morning Public Affairs, CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority. Bob Russell and John Jurisic talking with Lisa Helps. We're talking about the UBCM. And before we went to break, John asked Lisa about, this is what we've been talking about in our first hour, about the application and use of social media, the degree to which social media enhanced this meeting of the UBCM. I mean, in my day, before computers, mm-hmm. we had telephones. They had rotary dials.
You were before electricity, weren't you?
Well, damn near. You had to sit in meetings that would go on and on with, you know, bad recirculated air and everything else like that, and you drink too much coffee, and, you know, it was
probably a time when people could still smoke in meetings, too.
Oh, God,
so you're sitting there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
A puff of secondhand smoke.
Okay. Well, and in my case, that was okay.
Yeah, there you go. Firsthand smoke.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but anyway, so, you know, tell us a little bit about, what was going on electronically at this conference.
Well, it was fascinating. There was a very, very good session on social media and politics, first of all. And during that session, they had the Twitter feed, the UBCM Twitter feed up on the big screen. So you'd tweet and then you'd see your tweet up there. It was very interesting. And that discussion, the panel discussion on social media was really interesting in terms of the relationship between media, social media, and politics. And there was a fellow there from the Vancouver Sun, I believe, and he, far from social media putting regular media out of business, there's a really, really interesting relationship between the two. Mm-hmm. And somebody tweets and then the news reporter gets a lead, if you will, rather than having to hang out in smoky bars, and then follows it up. The other really fascinating thing is a reporter will say, hey, I'm covering this story via Twitter or Facebook, the tweet will go out, and then people can contact and say, hey, I've got some information to share. So the social media panel was absolutely fascinating. What was equally interesting was to experience the conference through Twitter at the same time as experiencing the conference in real time. So I sat there with my laptop on my lap. I don't have a smartphone. And as the panel, or as the dialogue was happening with regard to motions, I was tweeting so that people who were there and weren't there, particularly who weren't there, could know what was happening in real time, particularly with things like oil tankers, marijuana, and things of great concern. So that was part one of what I want to say.
Well, for the average Joe and for the average John, it was a treat to follow you.
Wow.
And Shachi Curl and,
yes.
and there was about half a dozen others.
Yep.
We were actually, it was like we were there.
Wow.
And I got a feel for the rhythm, especially when the premier and the wannabe premier were talking.
Mm.
There was, you know, we could almost hear them speaking.
Wow, that's incredible
and,
to hear.
And I really was engaged, and I never have been in this conference before. So I think it had an enormous impact.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, the speeches by the Premier and Mr. Dix. Historically, their addresses to this conference have been considered to be the big political event of each year. You know, it's the perfect audience for that to occur. You have sitting in the room a whole bunch of political activists, people who are elected and from the community, who form, you know, the backbone of provincial and in some cases federal political parties and volunteers. This is a key group to speak to as a politician. And, you know, starting with Mr. Dix, you know, he came in, was relaxed, comfortable, said a few things, not too much. What was the reaction in the room?
The reaction was very positive. I mean, I found his speech inspiring, really. He began by complimenting Christy Clark, by complimenting Jane Stirk, and by talking for the first 5 to 7 minutes about the need to clean up politics in terms of how politicians treat each other. And he was sincere. He was unscripted. He didn't even have any notes. And he spoke very, very eloquently in that regard. He got a standing ovation at the end, and I guess according to all the media reports, it's really outside after his speech that all the shenanigans happened.
Well, he made a bit of a misstep, I think one could call it.
Can we talk about that misstep?
Yeah, let's talk about that misstep.
Because this is pure politics here in terms of this misstep. He is stating that this law doesn't work. He's stating that any particular government in power, particularly the Liberals, obviously he'd be talking about them, in any given instance when they need to generate more money, will. I think that's true. yet was slammed for saying that.
Exactly.
So, Bob, I think you understand why that happened better than I do.
Okay, well.
Why would something that's true be a negative?
Well, you know, we place expectations on governments and politicians that we would never place on ourselves, on our families, on our businesses. Here's a good example of it. Imagine a business that has a requirement that it can never run a deficit. That would be a business that could never invest in anything.
There wouldn't be many.
And there just simply would not be anything. It's why you have, you know, depreciation on financial statements. It's why you do any number of things. If, you know, you have to spend money to make money. But, you know, we're not going to let government do that. Yet we'll talk a lot. We'll talk a lot about, you know, education. We'll talk a lot about, you know, healthcare. We'll talk about a lot of things that where investments, you know, in not just physical capital, but social capital is really required. But no, sorry, you have to balance your budget every year. And so and I think, you know, it comes from there. For Mr. Dix, you know, the problem with why I think he made a mistake is because, you know, his opponents want to develop a narrative of you know, the New Democrats as not being fiscally responsible, as being spendthrifts. And you know, he was talking like a bureaucrat or a former bureaucrat. You know, he says, why do we have a law that nobody pays attention to? It's just stupid. Well, you know, on the other side, if you're an elected politician, you know, sometimes you do things that are have to do things that are stupid. And if there's no harm or foul, which there isn't by having this piece of legislation, you just leave it alone.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is I don't necessarily think he made a political misstep by announcing that he would get rid of that law. I think and I was in the room still sitting, you know, doing my cleanup with Twitter. I didn't actually go out of the room and see the media scrum that happened. If he had have come out right away in response to the first question with courage and definitively said, this is what I plan to do, and here is why, and here is the alternative.
That's right.
That would have been a much stronger message than breaking into a sweat and being pushed and only after 18 questions finally saying.
Yeah.
So that was his misstep, not the announcement. That's fine.
Exactly.
The way it was done.
Yeah. I would go as far as to say that, you know, even the announcement was a misstep because it was unnecessary. Mm-hmm. That, you know, that's my point, is that it was an unnecessary.
But he was pushed into it,
well,
from what I understand.
Well, but, you know, if you allow yourself to be pushed into anything by anybody, especially the media in a media scrum, more trouble to follow. I mean, that's just
right. I was saddened. Yeah. I was saddened by the fact that this – we're talking about it.
Yeah.
That, in fact, the statement he made had a lot of logic and objective sort of sensibility to it. And here it's going to become a major part of the probably the liberal platform in the new in the election.
Well, you know what? We're going to talk about that in our last segment when we come back from commercial.
Excellent.
You've locked your doors.
Come on.
You think you're safe.
What?
But you can't stop.
No. Oh.
The arrival of your bills.
No.
CFAX 1070 understands. That's why we're giving you a chance to beat your bills. Head over to the all-new CFAX1070.com and show us the bill you want taken care of. Then listen for Al Farabee to announce your name weekday mornings at 7:10. You can win $50 to spend at Red Barn Market, taking the pressure off your food bill. And you'll qualify to have CFAX 1070 pay up to $500 to beat your bills. To enter and for full details, head to CFAX1070.com. Don't yell at your bills.
Get away!
Your bills with Red Barn Market and Victoria's News Authority. CFAX 1070.
Okay, Victoria, I've seen you line up for blocks to save 10 cents a liter on gas. I know you like a deal, so when it's time to sell your real estate, let's discuss how you can save thousands in realty fees. This is Kevin Ramsey, realtor with Fair Realty and SweetHomeVictoria.com. I will get top dollar for your property, I won't cut the buyer's agent's commission, and I won't sacrifice any marketing. And my rates reduce further when you sell quickly or when I find the buyer. In short, my commissions make sense. Visit my office at 1564 Fort Street or contact me through SweetHomeVictoria.com.
Let the sun shine in with Excalibur Glass. Get more out of your outdoor or indoor deck with a custom all-glass railing. Constructed with aluminum post supports, these railings are durable and attractive with no top or bottom rail to obscure your view. And of course, it'll add value to your home. Get the most out of your scenery with a custom all-glass railing from Excalibur Glass. You'll clearly see the difference. Excalibur Glass and Aluminum, the homeowner's store, 2189 Keating Cross Road.
Hi, I'm Rhonda Parker from Cruise Experts Travel. We want to invite you to join us on one of our exclusive escorted trips. We have Alaska Cruise and Land Tours, north or southbound. How about cruising the storied European seas, the Mediterranean from majestic Venice to beautiful Barcelona, or the Baltic visiting lively Copenhagen to exploring the treasures of St. Petersburg, and more? Call us. We would love to have you come along in 2013. 1-800-565-2784. Cruise Experts Travel, 1-800-565-2784.
Your fair weather and not so fair weather friends. With a forecast you can count on. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Welcome back to Sunday Morning Public Affairs on CFAX 1070, Victoria's News Authority. Bob Russell, John Jurisic, and Lisa Helps. We're in our last segment now, and we're talking about the UBCM. We were just talking about Mr. Dix and his speech and his little mishap in the scrum afterwards. Now we want to talk about the Premier's speech. Lisa, I don't know what everyone was expecting from the Premier, but it seems that they got something they weren't expecting. You could chat a little bit about that, but also, you know, we were talking about how much social media chatter there was during these speeches. What you were seeing happening in the social media while she was delivering her speech?
It was very, very interesting. So first of all, and I tried to convey this on Twitter as much as I could, there was palpable excitement and buzz in anticipation of her coming into the room. And when she came in, people stood. And one of the most interesting things was she appeared to be tweeting while she was speaking, because at Chrissy Clark BC kept putting out messages. Now, obviously, obviously someone was doing it for her. And then there was a really interesting comment.
Do you think she has staff?
I think she has staff. And then someone at the conference commented, "Wow, well, women are good at multitasking."
Yeah, well, there
there was some lightness to the Twitter feed. A lot of the tweets that came out and amplified her message were from staffers and supporters. Because I always look, I'm like, oh, who said that? You can click and you read their bio. So there was not a lot, at least on the Twitter feed, of uptake and amplification of her message from the floor, except for her announcements.
What's the reaction to people who are in that environment when they see, you know, this is what, you know, using old technology like what we're using right now? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a standard practice among some political parties that if someone was going to be on a call-in show on radio, you lined up a phone bank and you had staffers, you know, Bill from Richmond, calling to basically tie up the phone lines and ask lob questions.
I've been involved in this process of politicians trying to enable social media into their messaging, and it's been an abysmal failure.
Okay.
Because 99% of them, except for new politicians like Lisa, are simply spouting the government line.
Mm-hmm.
We can tell what that is. I want some genuine honesty. I want to hear what you're really feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I want to hear what's really happening. Don't just give me the news release tidbits.
So
and you can tell that. It's so easy.
Was there a reaction among the people who were sitting there on social media going, you know, go away, we're having a conversation here?
No, there wasn't. I mean, it was interesting. Basically, people, it seemed like there was a competition on Twitter to see who could get her announcements out first. So,
really?
So there wasn't actually much commentary on the on her address while it was happening. It was more just kind of getting the tidbits of her message out. But I thought what was most interesting is Sachi Curl from Canadian Federation of Independent Businesses and I kept tweeting back and forth and retweeting each other and getting a little bit of uptake.
Yeah.
Hey, Christy, what about small biz? Hey, Christy, small biz. And, you know, hashtag small B-I-Z. Because
it was fascinating to see the two of you talking like that.
Categorically. All of the $207 million worth of announcements were for large-scale infrastructure projects that sure will help families and, you know, drive her agenda forward, but don't create a resilient, sustainable economy for our province.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. One of the things that was interesting was she used the opportunity of the speech to announce that an agreement had been reached with the BCGEU.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people found that surprising. It wasn't that long ago, a month ago, when she stated very clearly there's no money. Since that time, we've heard that natural gas revenues have gone through the floor, creating some serious fiscal issues for the next budget. Now we've had an agreement with doctors, an agreement with nurses, and now an agreement with the BCGEU, all involve, well, certainly the ones with the nurses and one of the BCGEU involve modest increases all of a sudden, the end of net zero. How was that accepted?
It was, you know, she moved on so quickly from that to the next announcement that it didn't really get that much, at least in the Twitter world, didn't really get. I mean, there was, you know, the standard applause when the announcement was made. To tell you the truth, there wasn't a lot of conversation about it. The media reports afterward said that the 4% over 2 years to BCGEU is coming from, and she made this very clear that, and she also made this very clear about every single dollar that she announced. This is not new money. This is not new money. This is money that we have saved by being fiscally conservative and responsible. So
I bet you the teachers
were really
rolling about in their graves.
We're really pleased to hear this. Yeah.
So we'll see. It's going to be very interesting to watch this unfold over the next couple of years.
Well, you know, on that point, John, I guess, you know, the question I have is, you know, what's the game here? You know, this is an election year. We're in campaign mode. What's up?
Well, certainly, I had the same feeling, Lisa, as you did. And as a month ago, no money. All of a sudden, some money.
Yeah.
I began to question credibility.
Yeah.
And so you're saying that was the same feeling on the floor? I mean, we're clearly talking about UBCM and that experience for you. Was that the sense amongst fellow colleagues? What's really going on here? I mean, you're asking for money in one instance to help with some pretty core stuff. We need our streets fixed.
Mm-hmm.
We need to pay for some services. Why is there money all of a sudden?
Well, and to be clear, it's not that a month ago there was no money and now there is money. It's that a month ago there was no money. We found out since then there's going to be less than no money, and now suddenly there's money.
Yeah, it's an interesting conundrum. To tell you the truth, again, there wasn't much discussion. Probably because of this, she spoke and the conference ended. So, and then everyone dispersed back to their municipalities across the country. It'll be interesting to see the kinds of conversations that happen in response to her announcements and the no money, all of a sudden money over the next couple of weeks.
Tell us some of the human stuff that was going on here. We don't have a lot of time.
Well, you know,
you were there.
Yeah.
Well, we hear all these announcements. We hear the spin. What's going on in there?
Well, it was interesting. So we had a fantastic keynote address from Anna Maria Tremonti of CBC early in the conference. And what she talked about was speaking from the heart. That is what makes you memorable. Speak from the heart, and you know, even if people disagree with what you're saying, they will at least disagree more respectfully. And Christy Clark warmed the audience in preparation for this announcement by talking about her mother and caring for her mother. So there was a sense of intimacy maybe that was built. There was a sense of, wow, this person up here in this really hard position after all these months, she's a human being. And I think that there was something in her address that made her human.
Now, that is fascinating to me, because part of the raison d'etre to have Christy Clark elected as leader was to try to pull some of that female vote to the Liberal Party. That hasn't worked.
Mm-hmm. It has not worked. Abysmal failure.
Yeah.
So here I am hearing some sensitivity to that. Was that genuine? Did you feel that amongst some of the colleagues?
Yeah, that was something that was again as heartfelt as 144 characters can be. There was
isn't that beautiful?
there was some warmth and generosity towards her. About that. But are you talking more generally? What was the feeling on the floor? What was the feeling at the conference?
No. Specifically around – yes. Okay. Yes, I am. I mean for folks like us who go to conferences, and I've been to many, the real action happens when the speeches are over.
Absolutely.
It happens in the bars.
Yeah.
It happens
That's where I had the best conversations, at the reception.
That's when the real action happens. Tell me what was going on there.
Well, I can tell you – only tell you about the conversations that I had. I've shared one with you about what's going on in Burnaby and how did they get there.
Yeah.
Really interesting conversations with young politicians, my age, a little bit older, a little bit younger, about why we ran. Because there's a sea change happening in municipal politics. And even the organizers, the UBCM organizers, noted this as well. There is a definite younger generation of politicians like myself stepping up at the municipal level. And why? Because we haven't seen ourselves as represented in decision making.
This is great news. Well, I am shaking your hand. Listeners, that's what I just did.
Pandering, John.
Yeah, whatever.
Well, I mean, my comment is the thing I find interesting about that, and this has happened before, you know, young people getting involved in politics. It's called renewal. We used to see it happen. We see it happen all the time. We see it happen federally. We see it happen provincially. We don't see it happen federally and provincially anymore. One could, you know, I don't want to get all political science-y on everyone, but, you know, I mean, people will talk about the failure of our party system to make that happen. The thing I find interesting about what you're saying and about this phenomenon, and from what I understand is going on in the United States as well, is young people are going local. You know, we people my age who have gone
local
through the
local or local.
Well, you know, people my age who have gone through the whole, you know, globalization process. There was a lot written back in the 80s about what globalization was going to do, the effect of free trade agreements. And one of the things that was emphasized was that, you know, regional and national was going to disappear. What was going to become important was local and global.
Very interesting.
So regional governments, national governments, regional politics, national politics was going to disappear from priorities because people were going to focus locally because, you know, they would understand that what they paid for a, you know, product or what they paid for something, they now had an understanding and appreciation that that was affected by something going on the other side of the world. So they thought locally and globally. So we have all these young people going into local politics. And unfortunately, in Canada, this goes back to our earlier discussion, we've got local governments that don't have a lot of power to do much of anything and even less money.
But I think, I mean, ever the optimist, I think that my generation of local politicians will do two things collectively. One is bring new creative ideas to fix the fiscal situation. And two, realize the importance of our voices at the table, our ability to make change, and trickle up into other levels of government.
Bob, we need to have a show on this one issue because I find this vitally important.
And I could find lots of guests for us to talk with, young
so
politicians.
So let's segue into something, Bob. I know I'm going to give you about a minute or two to get going on. Young politicians, youthful energy, new creativity at the federal level. Trudeau.
Don't even get me.
I knew it.
Excuse
Come
me.
On, get let's hear.
God,
let's
excuse,
hear.
I have one simple line on Justin Trudeau. I think he would make an excellent leader of a third party.
Full stop. Out comes a poll soon within this milieu in the last week that were he to be leader, the Liberals would shoot to number one in popularity in Canada.
Yeah.
Lisa, your take.
Interesting, and we'll have to wait and see. I would be very interested to see. Again, I think it's dangerous. The Liberal Party has relied on having the right leader. That's what they've tried to do for the last three leaders. And is a leader enough to change the fortunes of a party? I don't know.
This is just another and following up on Lisa's point, it's just another variation on their back to the future approach to choosing leaders. We could go on and on, and we will on some subsequent show, but we have run out of time.
Oh, darn.
There we go. So, Lisa, as always, a pleasure to have you in the studio.
Pleasure to be here.
John, not so much. I want to thank my guests from earlier, Dr. Valerie Irvine from the University of Victoria and Rod Allen from the Ministry of Education. We had a great discussion on changing education, particularly K-12 in this province, and it's something that we're going to discuss again. And I thank you, our listeners, for spending your Sunday morning with us, and I hope that the rest of your Sunday is more pleasant than maybe this was.